And it seems somehow inevitable that the sense of tonality haunts his most beautiful works. Even when it's not demonstrably present, it still haunts those works by its conspicuous absence, if you can follow me. Does that sound paradoxical? It isn't at all when you realize that the 12 tones employed by Schoenberg are the same old 12 tones employed by everybody else, derived in the same way from the same natural harmonic series. They are the same 12 well-tempered tones of Bach, only their universal hierarchy has been destroyed, or at least an attempt has been made to destroy it. And Schoenberg himself was the first to recognize this all-important truth, and indeed the first to renounce the word atonality entirely, even to deny the possibility of atonality. Another paradox? Not at all. He knew, and we too must learn from him, that if ever a true atonality is to be achieved, some uniquely different basis for it must be found. The rules of the 12-tone method may be non-universal and even arbitrary, but not arbitrary enough to destroy the inherent tonal relationships among those 12 tones. Perhaps a real atonality can be achieved only artificially, through electronic means, perhaps, through a really arbitrary division of the octave space into something other than the 12 equidistant intervals of our chromatic scale. Let's say 13 equidistant intervals, or 30, or 313, but not 12, not the 12 tones of Bach and Beethoven and Wagner. With those 12 universals, neither Schoenberg, nor Berg, nor Webern, nor anyone could ever escape the nostalgic yearning for the deep structures implied by these notes, inherent in these notes. It's that alter Duft aus Märchenzeit again. And it's precisely this nostalgic yearning quality that so often makes their music beautiful and moving. Well,